With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You got some Chinese demand optimism. I think that's been supportive. So there's reports out there that the U.S. and China may be working toward lower tariffs on ag products. So that helps on the sentiment side.
Bob Maurer with Manduka Trading in Chicago on the importance of exports.
Recently, they were solid, but not necessarily extraordinary. So soybean exports came in within expectations at about 528,000 metric tons. That was up from the prior week and the second highest total of the last 6 weeks. So good there, right? Not explosive, but good. And we'll take that for now.
As far as corn inspections, according to USDA, strong 64.6 million bushels, below last week's 71.5 million, but still above last year's pace at 61.6 million. It's Mexico that remains a major destination for corn. Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, Vietnam have also been active. On wheat, 4.9 million bushels, down sharply from the prior week and well below last year. Sorghum inspections light at 91,500 bushels, nearly all of that going to China. But sorghum exports now four times what they were this time last year. Record milk production weighing on dairy prices could pressure producer margins in the months ahead. Texas A&M AgriLife Extension livestock marketing economist Dr. David Anderson reports May marked the 15th straight month of year-over-year milk production growth. U.S. milk production, 20.5 billion pounds, up 2.3% from last year, largest monthly total on record. Production per cow reaching a record 2,128 pounds. Texas adding 28,000 milk cows from a year earlier, continuing a rapid dairy growth in the panhandle. Florida, Georgia also adding cows. Virginia declined slightly. Anderson says strong milk prices, expanding processing capacity, high calf and cold cow prices, and lower feed costs are helping drive production growth. But farm lease decisions could carry more weight as crop margins tighten and input costs remain high. Dr. Michael Langemeyer, director of Purdue University's Center for Commercial Ag, compares crop share, fixed cash rent, and flexible cash lease returns for a West Central Indiana case farm from 2007 through 2026. Said the Case farm used 3,000 acres in a corn-soybean rotation. His analysis shows that crop share and flexible cash leases give landowners more upside when crop revenue increases, but also exposes them to greater downside when revenue falls. Fixed cash rent actually offers more stable annual returns. American Farmland Trust launching a redesigned beef producer economic resilience initiative to help cattle producers improve profitability through sustainable grazing systems. Beef Grazing Network, now part of USDA's Advanced Markets for Producers program. $42 million project includes $30 million from the Natural Resources Conservation Service, supporting 700 beef producers across the Mid-Atlantic, Southeast, and Texas. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
With consolidation in the U.S. dairy industry leading to fewer and larger farms, we are rapidly approaching a level of 20,000 dairy farms by the end of the decade.
We've seen a lot of consolidation across ag, but in dairy farms, Ben Lane is with Terrain.
This shifting landscape will present new risks and opportunities for producers and new dynamics for markets. As consolidation progresses, there will be implications for both markets and industry structure. With large farms less responsive to near-term price signals, margin cycles are likely to be prolonged. Structurally, the industry will move toward greater vertical coordination and integration along the supply chain. As of 2025, there were 23,609 licensed dairy herds in the U.S., according to the USDA, down more than 1,000 farms from the year before. While 1,000 farms exiting the business is significant, it is the smallest decline in farm numbers in the decade since licensed dairy herds have been tracked. In 1992, there were an estimated 131,509 dairy farms. Declining by an average of about 5% each year, the U.S. has lost more than 100,000 dairy farms in just over a generation. Fewer farms, however, does not mean less milk. The U.S. dairy industry produced 231.7 billion pounds of milk in 2025. That's 54% more milk than in 1992, despite having 190,238 fewer cows on 107,900 fewer farms, a stunning improvement in efficiency. The move to fewer farms means that the remaining farms have become larger. They use different technology, they have shifted geographically, they face different challenges and respond differently to price signals and market cycles. The shift results in a larger share of the nation's milk coming from a smaller share of farms. As of the USDA's 2022 Census of Agriculture, half of the dairy farms in the U.S. had fewer than 100 cows, yet those farms only represented 4% of total milk sales. Meanwhile, farms with 2,500 or more cows represented only 4% of total farms, but 45% of total milk sales. The primary driver of consolidation in the dairy industry, like many others, is the push to achieve economies of scale. Larger farms are generally able to produce milk at a lower per unit cost than their smaller counterparts. The USDA Economic Research Service used the cost frontier model to estimate economies of scale and found that across all farm sizes for which data were available, a 1% increase in milk output resulted in a cost increase of less than 1%. This suggests that the cost of production per hundredweight of milk can be reduced by increasing total production on the farm, leading to efficiency gains through economies of scale and a continual push toward larger farms as an industry. Overhead is a key cost category that pressures smaller farms disproportionately. Dairy farms in the U.S. across a variety of sizes and geographies have become remarkably efficient at milking cows and minimizing operating costs. But overhead can be harder to control. Larger operations are in a better position because they can spread it across higher levels of output. Within the overhead category, labor efficiency is one of the most important avenues for achieving efficiency as scale increases from the small end of the production spectrum. Importantly, small farms rely disproportionately on unpaid family labor compared with hired labor. While often not accounted for, this represents a meaningful economic cost. The opportunity cost is estimated in USDA cost of production data and represents the cost of giving up the opportunity to earn income at an alternative job. For small farms with fewer than 100 cows, this typically represents 90% of total labor cost on the farm. For larger farms with more than 1,000 cows, the opportunity cost of unpaid labor is typically less than 10%. For farms above 500 head, the labor efficiency becomes less dramatic once the majority of labor is hired, and the benefits of scale may appear through other technologies like parlor technology, genetic programs, dedicated heifer raising, and cow tracking and monitoring.
Ben Lane with Terrain. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express water wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express water wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express water wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Some people, when they ask me questions about lowering the productivity factor down to a lower dollar value per acre in terms of the coverage, their main motivation there is to actually save premium dollars.
Jay Parsons is the director of the Center for Ag Profitability at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln on cutting cost.
One thing to keep in mind is that you can't, there's other ways to adjust it. That does not adjust your actual premium rates because you're still covering 90% coverage. All it does is lower the dollar value of everything. I actually tell people, and a lot of people do consider when they're looking at, you know, do I really need to pay this money into this insurance product? Maybe I need a little bit lower level of stuff. Keep in mind, if you adjust the coverage level itself, it actually gives you a higher subsidy and lowers your premium rate. So I wanted to show you an example of that. And we'll use this April-May planting. This is what the example I just showed you, where we had 90% coverage level. It was a $12.52 premium that the producer paid into the product, okay? If I take that same coverage, the only adjustment I changed was a 75% coverage level instead of a 90% coverage level. So I basically accepted another 15% deductible on the rainfall. What does that do? Well, that instead of $149 worth of protection, now it's $124 worth of protection. Instead of a 51% subsidy, I'm now getting a 59% subsidy. Okay. So it's still spreading out that coverage over the same months and the same percentages. It's just we're down at $124.17 instead of the $149 I had before. Premium rates are much lower now. If I look back, we had 14, 14, and almost 24. Now we're at basically 9, 9, and 18 because I'm accepting another 15% deductible. So their expectations on payout make it cheaper on the insurance side because they don't expect to pay out as much or as often because of that deductible in there. So that lowers the total premium to $14.73 and the producer premium because of this lower rate and the higher subsidy producer premium is down at $6.04. So that compares to the $12.52. So about half of the premium. Okay. But I'm accepting another 15% deductible on that. How does that work? Well, we had that 2025 year where it paid out, I think, 17 something on the previous example. It's only going to pay out $9.83 with this lower coverage level because I accepted more of a deductible in there. Okay. The zeros are still zeros. You know, if it didn't pay out at 90%, it's not going to pay out at 75%. And you're going to have a few more of them. In this case, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 zeros on there, right? Because there's sometimes where you have that rainfall between 75 and 90%. It would not pay out on a 75% coverage level at all. Okay. But this is what I want you to pay attention to because 604, there returned an average indemnity of about $13. That's about a 2.15 compared to the 1.8 that we had on the previous example. There's going to be a few more years where it's not going to net positive for you. Okay. Because of that extra deductible in there. But overall, it doesn't matter. Well, I should say it doesn't matter. But if you stick with one of these policies for a period of time, like 20 years, which is what I'm pulling data from here, it will pay back because of the subsidy. The premium rates they charge are based off of data, past data, and as accurate as they can get it in terms of what they're charging you for the premium. And then the government's going to pay over half of your premium for you. A lot of it's just choosing how you want it to pay out or how you want it to work. So if you're looking at a lower premium, in this case, we cut our premium in half. This is one way to get to it. And I'm not saying you have to do it this way, but definitely you want to consider this as an option if you're okay with that.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We were already running pretty tight on numbers for cattle, just because, you know, as we all know, there's fewer numbers out there. But also from a packer standpoint, if they're running, losing $200 a head on average every time an animal grows across the scale, there's a pretty large incentive there not to want to, you know, process more animals.
Elliot Dennis, livestock economist, University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
So there is some reshifting and redistributing on how many animals we need to process. And even though we've made it up a little bit with tons for total beef production, there is tonnage plus, you know, total head that's being processed. And so one of the benefits of being a kind of this increased tonnage has really been just increase in quality of grading of cattle. A lot of that has to do with just extended days on feed. And I know that was some of the highlights from the last cattle on feed report, but that's helped to kind of cattle quality grading, which of course in the summer, it's been great because we want, you know, high choice animals as we start to get into growing months. But now that the 4th of July is past, we're kind of on the downhill slope into Labor Day. And so we've kind of reached peak grilling season. And really what that means is we're going to have some potential weakness in the rib and the loin, which tends to be kind of that primary meats that we tend to think of for summer. So all of that's, you know, really kind of, you know, hampered some of that, you know, cutout value.
And what about the boxed beef cutout? What are we seeing?
We had a pretty big run up in February and March, a little bit sooner, and then we kind of peaked and it's kind of come down to this about 390 per hundredweight range. And normally we'd see quite a bit of movement starting in that, really, I'd say kind of late February, early March, and just kind of has the continually stair stepped up, you know, a little bit past the 4th of July is generally the typical seasonal movement. But really, we had a pretty flat market the last, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. The cutout really hasn't changed a lot. And some of that was because some of the retailers were had quite a few forward buying purchases, which essentially means that they were trying to anticipate the demand, and some of them were hedging against, you know, higher beef prices. So let's buy it ahead of time, and so we can price in what we're going to be. But if we had, you know, strong beef demand, normally what would happen is that cutout would continue to kind of push a little bit higher. And the reason why is because that means retailers would have to go into the spot market and buy kind of residual demand that they were seeing from consumers. The fact that they're not going into the spot market to buy kind of residual and that price is just staying at $390 indicates that there is some, I guess, resistance from, you know, consumers and beef users to actually higher beef prices. And so really, you know, that's a pretty big impact. And when you think about it in terms of just like the other factors that are really affecting, you know, consumers at this point, you know, fuel and energy are really the two largest, you know, budget items there. So when you think about just like, you know, think of like ground beef, you know, that they're, you know, a person's exchanging for, you know, a month's worth of gas, you know, it's like $23 a pound of ground beef per month that they're giving up, and about $12 in ribeye prices or ribeyes. And so, you know, they are making these exchanges in their fixed budget. So they're saying, you know, fuel prices are rising, so I got to reshuffle some of these things. And I think one of the things we're seeing kind of reshuffle into is kind of these different protein, these high protein items.
That's Elliot Dennis, University of Nebraska at Lincoln, livestock economist. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
With the Strait of Hormuz reopening, in some respect, it's not back to normal, right? You're still seeing vessels going into the Strait be a little bit slower, exporting vessels maybe not near normal, but at least they're moving. At least we see China starting to talk about exporting.
Josh Linville is Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX.
And we have seen NOLA urea, New Orleans, Louisiana urea, trading as far down as 350, 355 here in recent days. And so let's look back at history. If you go back to 2018, which to me for North American marketplace, nitrogen market, that is the start of the new cycle. And that's because the new debottleneck construction projects were done. Everything was online optimal. The new production lines were online and operational. That was the start of our new market. All the new imports, exports, and things like that reached a new level. If you look at that, about half of the weeks going back to the start of 2018 have been at or cheaper than where NOLA urea is today. Now, if you go to 2022, that's a little bit of a different story. We're in the bottom 40% as far as going back to 2022. And the reason I say that, 2022 is when Russia was invading Ukraine, European production went down, China started restricting their exports, the global nitrogen market kind of went nuts. So today's values, they look incredibly low versus the highs that we saw this spring, but they're just kind of okay versus the last several years. Unfortunately, when you start to look at these values versus corn, since 2022, again, we're kind of in that bottom 40%. It's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. The same thing for 2018. Just over half of the weeks were better value than where we are today. So we've seen this massive fall off of values, and there's a big justification for us not going much lower than we already have, but it's just not a number that stands out to get really, really excited about. So, and I think that's the problem the market's having. People are looking at the urea value. They're looking at the grain value. They're looking at farmer financing and saying, I'm just not really happy to jump up and down and start locking into this. Let's wait and let's see if something happens later on. I will say the market, globally speaking, is trying really hard to set a price for where we're at today. We'll see if it holds.
But even with all of this, key risk remain. Mark Rosenbaum with Terrain.
War risk is significantly diminished, but not gone. A memorandum of understanding to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and end, at least for now, the U.S.-Iran war was signed June 17th, setting off a 60-day window to finalize critical issues. These include major issues such as management of the strait, U.S. sanctions relief, financial incentives for Iran, and the future of Iran's nuclear program. The end of this 60-day window is around mid to late August, an important time for both pre-harvest fuel needs and early fertilizer purchase decisions for the 2027 crop. If talks stall and military action resumes, prices could rise and again be volatile during a key period. Global stocks of crude oil and refined products helped buffer the impact of the Iran war. Those stocks will get rebuilt, at least to some degree, over time. China significantly cut crude oil imports in the months since March and likely has drawn down stocks while stock releases from the International Energy Agency member countries have hit markets. The timing of stock rebuilding and how fast crude oil and refined product production and consumption return to normal levels will be key for how quickly prices across the energy complex return to more normal pre-war levels. Concerns about the fragility of the peace agreement could lead to a desire for urgent partial rebuilding, supporting prices, and slowing their expected decline over the next 3 to 6 months. Meanwhile, U.S. fertilizer markets are under federal scrutiny due to high industry concentration and complaints of persistently higher fertilizer prices over the past several years. The investigations, one led by the Justice Department with assistance from the USDA and another by the Federal Trade Commission, are examining major fertilizer producers' pricing and competitive practices. These investigations, which are ongoing and have yet to result in any conclusions or enforcement actions, are worth watching because of their potential to, one, alter the structure of the industry, and two, alter price dynamics.
It's Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Our topic this week is bovine congestive heart failure and what we see in feedlot cattle.
The host of Cow-Calf Corner on Oklahoma State's Sunna, Dr. Mark Johnson, beef breeding specialist, Oklahoma State.
Bovine congestive heart failure, sometimes you might hear about it referred to as late-day morbidity or late-stage morbidity, has become a very significant source of loss in the feedlot sector, and sometimes called late-day morbidity because it's these cattle that are getting farther along, more days on feed, and getting heavier weights, and they're literally dropping dead of heart attacks. And so this has become a real priority for our business. We've seen several projects that are ongoing around the country collecting research data. And what we talk about today is some of the most recent things that I learned from attending the Beef Improvement Federation meetings a few weeks ago as far as where we're at in taking a look at a way to potentially select and improve and find healthier hearts in cattle. Bovine congestive heart failure, if we think about symptoms, this can look really similar to high altitude or brisket disease. It can look very similar to hardware as we think about cattle. The difference is if it's high altitude disease, we can move those cattle to lower elevation and they typically recover. When we think about bovine congestive heart failure, it's non-treatable, it's fatal, it is basically right ventricular heart failure in the later stages of finishing that we see in fed cattle. So it's something that we need to address, and we have got some interesting and I think encouraging information of where we're at. If we take a look at heart scores, as you see on the screen, we can collect these phenotypes at harvest endpoint on fed cattle, where a number one heart score indicates a very healthy heart, and the scale goes up to 5, which is a very remodeled heart with the right ventricle really misshapen and enlarged. Typically, that score of 5 is what we see in these cattle that are actually perishing from bovine congestive heart failure. In collecting these phenotypes, what we have learned to this point, and a lot of these trials are ongoing, and we continue to collect more data, it is encouraging that this looks to be a polygenic trait, meaning a lot of alleles contribute to its inheritance. As such, we are able to estimate variance components. It looks like the heritability of heart score is going to be in the low to moderate range, meaning that selection to try to improve heart scores or select for healthier hearts is possible. And as we think about that, we can accordingly generate expected progeny differences for heart scores. And long-term, and potentially even short-term, we're going to have selection tools to make genetic improvement, improve the additive genetic merit of cattle for healthier hearts. If we think about where this occurs, there are a lot of potential causes of heart failure in cattle. A lot of them are non-genetic. This can occur in any operation at any age of cattle, about anywhere in the country. But if we think about where we primarily see it in the feedlot sector, as we come up with these selection tools, we're going to have a means, since this problem exists in all breeds and there is variation in it, in heart scores in all breeds of cattle, we potentially have the means to select to improve it.
Oklahoma State beef breeding specialist, Dr. Mark Johnson. It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.